Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Oh, a great tackle by Steve Tasker.
Into the end zone. Touchdown. Touchdown.
And he's got it at the 10-yard line.
Touchdown. Touchdown. Touchdown, Buffalo. The Bills win it in overtime.
Happy Friday, everybody. Happy weekend, and welcome to the show. Welcome to One Bills Live. We're coming to you from Orchard Park, right next door to the Bills Stadium. John Murphy, along with Chris Brown. Chris is our fill-in today for Steve Tasker, who is scheduled to return on Monday. Welcome, Chris. Bills Insider Chris Brown from BuffaloBills.com.
We are right next to the stadium.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's.
Well, I want to situate people.
Where that's we're right. Here. Yeah, we're right here.
We're right here. We're here every day, noon to 3.
Adjacent, three. If you will.
Yes, next door to New Era Field, here until 3 o'clock.
Like these new mics, Murph. These are great.
Well, the mics are the same, I believe, but the
well, the apparatus.
Yes, the apparatus is different.
Apparatus, yeah, sure.
I like them. Look at this.
I just like that it's not up here. I'm always, you know, they're always coaching me on the other side of the glass here to, you know, make sure it's not in the way of your face. And now I don't have to worry about it. It's right along the desk here. This is a brilliant design. I love the ergonomics going on here.
You've always been a fan of FaceTime for yourself, and here you go. This is
that's right, yeah.
Yeah, they look good.
Got to get the big dome out there,
look,
man.
Look at that. No noise, nothing. They move around. Perfect. The other ones were a little
beautiful.
Noisy. Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Well done.
Yeah, good work. Welcome to the show. Chris is here until 3. Good show coming up. Adrian Waddle's going to join us at 12:30. Bill's new offensive lineman, the tackle, former New England Patriot, going to join us at 12:30 on the line. Greg Cosell, as usual, Friday, 1 o'clock spot with us to talk about the draft. And maybe more. We'll talk a little bit about NFL officiating today. Maybe we'll get a guest on with that. And we welcome you to join us as well. Of course, everybody preoccupied with the NCAA basketball tournament.
Guilty.
Yes, me too. I stayed up until midnight last night watching.
I didn't last
night. I actually watched the post-game press conferences at home last night. How pathetic is that?
You didn't have to watch Michigan for very long. You could switch to the other games.
Well, I mean, that was... you know, it got down to 8 points.
Yeah, whatever. You know where it was going.
Though. I did have a good feeling about it going in. Yeah, Montana was the Grizzlies were they're a conference champion. I don't overlook anybody. I hate to sound like a coach, but you don't overlook those teams that have played a tough season. I think they won 26 games, won their conference tournament. You can't overlook those guys. They know how to win. You know, and anything can happen, right?
I would agree, but it's Montana, Murph. Come on.
I know.
I'm sorry.
It was a good win for the Michigan Wolverines. They advanced.
No insult to the Big Sky Conference, but, you know, sorry.
They advanced to Michigan advances to play Florida. That'll be a little bit better, right? And Florida is not a great team, but a pretty good team. And
Nevada really disappointed me.
Yeah.
They did not show up. They could not hit the side of a barn. I mean, the only thing their shots were hitting consistently were the floor. I mean, they couldn't find the rim.
Yeah.
It was bad.
Yeah.
That was a team that went to the Sweet 16 last year and didn't have a whole lot of turnover. I think they lost 3 seniors that started for them. I mean, okay, that's a loss, but they were in the top 20 the whole year. They should have been better. I was disappointed.
Interesting games, though, yesterday. I thought a lot of them. Baylor over Syracuse didn't go
got
right
that
down
one.
To the wire. Yeah,
love
I had that
it.
One, too. I had Syracuse losing. Syracuse, of course, played without their player, right?
Frank
without
Howard.
Frank Howard, so... kind of made
yeah, but they had the Tyus kid back, so.
Yep.
He actually played well for them.
Everybody raving about Murray State and the 12 seeds victory over Marquette.
It's got my favorite game coming up here, Murph.
Yeah.
Second round game. I've already got it marked on my calendar.
When is that game?
It's Saturday.
Yeah. We know what time?
I don't have a time yet, but I will mark it down and make sure.
Why do you like that game so much?
Because it's going to be a track meet. Florida State and Murray State? I mean, if both teams aren't in the 80s, I'm going to be shocked. Because I got to say this, I knew Murray State was a good team, and I kind of went with my Big East heart instead of my head, and I picked Marquette in that game, even though I flip-flopped. I wrote that down and crossed it out like 3 times.
I picked Murray State.
And then ended up going with Marquette and proved to be wrong. I had only seen one Murray State game this year, and John Morant got injured in the first minute of the game. he turned an ankle and left, which was funny because the announcers are like, there's 28 NBA scouts in this building, and they're watching Ja Morant walk off the floor with a turned ankle after 30 seconds. It was bad. Yeah. Murray State might be the fastest transition team I have seen in 30 years. I mean, I got to go all the way back to, like, UNLV, Larry Johnson, Anderson Hunt, you know, those teams, to find a team that get up and down the floor as fast as they do. I mean, it's like the Showtime Lakers when they get a defensive rebound. They are gone. But the thing is, Florida State has the athletes to hang with them. So that is going to be a fascinating game because it's strength versus strength. They are a mirror image of each other in terms of pure athleticism. So you want to watch guys above the rim and getting up and down the floor. You like up-tempo basketball. I mean, I'm trying to think. Loyola Marymount under Paul Westhead, maybe that's another team that got up and down as fast as them because they used to have to shoot it in 6 seconds or they'd be on the bench. That is a game not to be missed this weekend.
I got to tell you, though, FSU is going to win, don't you think?
I don't know. I
hope it's a good game, but I'm not anticipating.
I think Murray State could beat them. Florida State has some talent, but they don't have a lottery pick kid on their team like Murray State does.
That game starts at 6:10 p.m. I just looked it up tomorrow.
All right. I'm going to be TNT. In front of a television.
You're going to skip Florida, Michigan at 5:15 p.m.?
If it means watching the other one, then yeah.
Okay.
I'm watching the other one. I will jump from that game to Florida State, and I will watch that game in its entirety. I'll only flip back for media timeouts to the other games.
Michigan's,
isn't it great, though?
Yeah,
I mean, you just flip between the four channels.
Oh, yeah,
just
boom, boom. That's
bang,
what I did
bang,
last night.
Bang, bang, recall, last channel.
My thumb hurts today from doing that all night last night. Michigan State, Bradley was an interesting game last night, and interesting in the controversy around Tom Izzo, who had very strong words and even strong gestures for one of his players.
All right.
And I think it's been overblown a little bit, but you got to be careful, Chris. I think we're in a new age here. You don't want to be on TV wagging your finger in a player's face or, he jumped up out of his chair as if he was going to go after the player. You can't
right.
do that. You
and
can't
fortunately,
even approach
he
them.
Had a coach and a player to kind of restrain him.
Yeah.
And sometimes the intensity of the game and the situation can get the best of you. You get all wrapped up in the game and then you're hot and you say something to a kid that maybe you don't want to say, but if there's somebody jogging down the floor in transition, that's going to catch his eye and probably about the eye of 98% of the coaches in Division I because you can't have it. You can't have it. So you got – and, I heard what he said after the game. I'm going to hold my players accountable, and I'm fully in support of that. I don't think you got to get in a guy's face and threaten him. But at the same time, I agree with the reason that he was angry because – at that level, you cannot have somebody jaking it out there on the floor and jogging back. And from what I understand, because I heard Dan Dockich on the in the morning on the radio, and he said he knows the high school coach that freshman kid played under in high school in Indianapolis, and he said that guy's an even bigger disciplinarian than Tom Izzo is. So he's heard it before, and he's used to it. I'm not saying that justifies right. it, but I think he was well within his rights to say what he felt he had to say. You want to? I don't know about approaching him and getting all up in his face. I don't know about that, but
right, you can say what he wants, but you can't threaten him physically. It's interesting too, and predictably, the coaching fraternity kind of closed ranks around Tom Izzo and this is Tom Izzo. We know who he is. Okay, I get that. But watching one of the and I don't even know who the two former players were on one of the shows. CBS and all of these networks with the tournament this week have halftime shows and in-between game shows.
Yeah.
Two youngish, maybe 30-ish, male and a female, African-American former players, both took great exception to Izzo wagging his finger in the face of his player. And I thought, they're right. Those two players are right. You don't do that. You can't do that. You can be very strong verbally. You can be yell and scream, but you can't threaten the players physically. And if you could do it 20 years ago, you can't do it now. I know.
Well, is wagging a finger a physical threat?
A little bit, yeah. If I go, look, did you see how you flinched?
Did
somebody
I flinch?
Yeah. Somebody puts their finger in your face, you are immediately on the defense. And I don't think that's acceptable. And I saw those players last night. I don't know their names. Former players talk about that, and I thought, they're right. You can't do that.
Hmm.
Got away with it 20 years ago, doesn't mean you can do it now. Anyway, There are games this afternoon, as you know. Iowa-Cincinnati will tip it off in about 5 minutes. Oklahoma-Ole Miss later this hour. Northern
like Cincinnati.
Kentucky, Texas Tech, UC Irvine, Kansas State, Colgate, Tennessee, all of them the early afternoon games. Of course, most of our listening area, our viewing area, concerned about the 4 o'clock game today, the men's game at least, Buffalo versus Arizona State. That game coming up at 4 o'clock today on TNT. Should be a good game. UB goes in there with 31 wins, so obviously they must be taken seriously. Arizona State goes in there with a pretty good win the other night against St. John's and a very high-profile coach. I would think UB will win, but this won't be a cakewalk, I wouldn't think.
Well, again, you got two teams with similar strengths. You know, just probably equal in athleticism. There are players that can hit the three, I don't think with quite the same effectiveness as UB can for Arizona State. Their point guard's nicked up with the groin injury, and like we were saying on yesterday's show, if it's me, whoever Remy Martin is guarding, I'm telling that guy to take it to the hole, because with that groin injury, he cannot slide defensively as quick as he usually does. So you know the help is then going to be coming to help Martin. The other players are probably, you know, in tune to that. And so now you should have somebody open, whether you're kicking it to somebody or there's somebody down low based on the help defense who comes open. The guy who's ball handling, taking Martin off the bounce, is going to have to look for that if his own shot isn't there because of a double team.
That'll be a good game. Women's UB women's team plays today as well, about 4:30.
Yeah.
They go up against Rutgers, that game in Connecticut today.
Yeah,
so.
I saw Rutgers coach. I guess she's not Stringer. Vivian Stringer is not. I don't think she's going to be there. She took another leave of absence.
I did not know that.
Due to health reasons. So, obviously, we wish the best to her, but you wonder what state her team will be in, knowing that Coach Stringer might not be on the sidelines. At least that's the last I saw going into the weekend last week, that she was not going to be with the team for the tournament, at least the early stages. So
4:30 game, that is, in Storrs, Connecticut.
Yeah,
today.
That's going to be tough for UB fans. They're going to be flipping the channel back and forth. Because isn't the women's tournament on ESPN2?
ESPN2 today,
yeah.
UB is, yeah. I mean, hey, I did it all day yesterday.
I know, but, like, you kind of, you know, if you're an alum or a diehard fan, you want to see this game in its entirety, and now halfway, you know, maybe I guess you hope the UB men are done just about with the first half by the time you got to flip over to that game. And
well, you can also go back during commercial breaks.
I know, but you want to kind of watch it start to finish. If
well,
you're
you go
like,
back and rewind to where you left it.
You can't rewind it.
You take 4 hours and watch 2 hours of basketball. I do that all the time. Are you kidding me?
Can't DVR.
I do that all the time.
Can't DVR the tournament. Stuff's happening too fast. It's too fluid. Can't live in the past.
Easy.
You got to live in the live moment there. And
men's game and commercial, switch over back where you left it. Watch that. That game gets the commercial, go back to the men's game. It's kind of mentally, it's a good mental exercise. I've done it before in football games, football days.
That's tough.
Yeah. Anyway, the tournament goes on with the Buffalo teams in action today, and we're going to talk about football mostly here. I do want to talk about this, Chris. This got your attention. I read it too.
Yeah.
NFL team executive, according to Robert Klemko, he writes for Sports Illustrated. We have him on the show. He had a quote from an NFL executive, an unidentified NFL executive, and he got off on a rant about college football and amateurism. The NFL executive, quote, "The whole thing stinks. There's so much money at the college level, and if the good guys aren't going to pay you, the bad guys are. The college coaches are always honest about their kids leaving early, and I tell them, until you start paying them, they're leaving. You have these huge TV contracts. You can pay 10 coaches $1 million each. Exaggeration. But you can't pay the players. Doesn't make sense. It's garbage. And everybody knows it's garbage." Interesting quote. An unidentified NFL team executive who is, and it struck me a little bit too in the context of this week with the basketball tournament going on and the millions of dollars generated. And
$820 million.
All of it, you know. And
just from the tournament.
By the way, there's more than enough TV commercials on watching these games today, right? Did that annoy you at all? The same commercials?
It's a lot.
But it's the same deal in college basketball. Steve and I had Tasker and I had a disagreement a couple of weeks ago, and I said, I forget what we were talking about. I said something along the lines of college, big-time college sports is fundamentally corrupt. I believe this NFL team executive is acknowledging that, saying that in his quotes for Robert Klemko. He says, the NCAA, they're all crooks. It's extortion of these players because they're all beat up. He went on to how the players struggle to get through the physicals at the combine. But he's right. And I keep waiting, and I mentioned this to Steve a couple weeks ago, Chris. I thought that the FBI investigation into college basketball violations, which is ongoing, in fact, there are sentencings coming up I thought that might be like a cleansing moment for college basketball, big-time college sports.
Not when this much money is involved.
There's too much money involved. Yeah. And people can, you know, people can cheat and be suspended and lose NCAA certification for a while, a year or two, and yet the beat goes on. There's no stopping this thing, the football or basketball, big-time college sports. I think this NFL team executive is right.
The All-American Conference, which is not a Power 5 conference. They're probably somewhere between mid-major and a power conference. That group, which is largely a basketball conference, we're talking like UConn, Central Florida, South Florida, Memphis, teams like this, which is a conference that UB should take a look at quite seriously in the next few years because they're pretty close to reaching critical mass. They just signed a deal to be on ESPN+. Each team is going to get $7 million a year for the next 10 years. The All-American Conference, Murph.
Yeah.
Not like the SEC or the ACC. $7 million per school per year in TV rights to be on ESPN+. I mean, I don't even have ESPN+. You know what I mean? I got to go on my laptop to get that. The money is even trickling down to the non-Power Fives in exorbitant fashion.
Oh, yeah.
Because all of these streaming outlets now are looking for programming to fill. And, you know, I believe that's a 12-team conference, decent-sized markets in many areas, you know. And I think that's where UB should go. That's where they should make that jump.
Jump into that money.
Well, yeah, because if
that's
you wanna,
what you're saying.
Yeah, because if you want to hold on to the coaches you have, you're going to have to pay them more. Where's that revenue coming from? It's coming from TV money.
Yeah.
That's the only way you're going to be able to compete and hold on to coaches that you want. Otherwise, you're just going to be cycling through, getting a conference that's going to generate the revenue you need to hold on to those coaches while also being able to actually fill real jobs that do real work in the athletic department to support it all.
You're talking about the American Athletic Conference?
The All-American Conference.
Are you
Isn't
sure?
it the All-American
No, I think it's the American, the AAC.
Yeah, that's the one I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was the All-American
Houston,
Conference. Yeah.
Temple, those schools.
Houston,
yeah.
Temple, Memphis, Central Florida, UConn.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. No, I see what you mean. You're right. It's a maybe a half notch above. Well, it's at the top end of mid-major, right?
I would say yes.
Yes.
It's funny because the commissioner of that conference, he's starting to throw around the term Power Six because
of course
he's trying
he is.
To build his conference into the next Power Conference. You know, you got the Power Five and then everybody else, so he's trying to get up into that conversation. I think it's a pretty astute marketing move on his part. And this ESPN television rights deal, which just happened like a week ago, is certainly putting him in that conversation now.
Memphis, Houston, Tulane, SMU. They're
putting them in that conversation.
Navy, Tulsa, Central Florida, Temple, Cincinnati, South Florida,
yeah. I mean, you
Eastern
have
Carolina,
some decent-sized markets.
Sure.
I mean,
yeah.
Houston being the lead dog, obviously, but you got some decent Florida markets. You got Tampa, because South Florida's in there, right?
Yep.
You know, Central
South Florida and Central Florida.
And Central Florida. So you got, you know, middle of the state there. You know,
Cincinnati.
Buffalo would bring a top 50 television market
sure.
to the table. I mean, I think that's someone they should talk to, because you're never going to get there in the Mid-American Conference. Not as long as you have teams in your conference from Athens, Oxford, Ohio. I mean, it's not going to happen. I mean, the next biggest market after Buffalo is what, Toledo?
Yeah.
So you're not getting there.
You've immediately gone to an NFL executive, Ripsey NCAA.
Yeah, and now I've got a business plan for
exactly.
UB to get to the next step.
Did you not get the point? The point is, Chris, college football,
no, I got
college
the point.
Basketball is fundamentally corrupt.
Yes.
How in the world is it legal? You know, how is it legal that the
well,
players
what
don't
do
get
they
a
do? They make the argument that they're getting a free four-year college education. Now, realistically, the top 10% of the athletes on these teams are not really all that concerned about a college education because they're thinking about a pro career in sports. I suppose you could make the NCAA could make the argument that they're getting a free education, and these days a four-year college education at a private institution is upwards of $250,000, you know, upwards of $200,000, I think, because believe me, I've been to a couple of private schools lately, and it ain't going to be cheap.
Right.
state school, come on! So, you know, you could make that argument. How valid is it? I don't know. You tell me. I mean, is $200,000 college education, or you want to ballpark it and say $150,000, $160,000 is what they're getting for free, and that's why they get to come and, you know, be athletic for us. I mean, the pluses or the pros for the institutions far outweigh you know, whatever they're giving up in free education.
They're generating millions and millions every year. The NFL executive who talked to Robert Klemko had a really good quote here. He said, these players are never more marketable than the 4 years while they're in college. Their stadiums are bigger than ours. Everyone paid $100 to get in and $50 to park, and the conference has a TV contract, and there's national TV, and the players don't get a dime. How in the world is this legal?
Right.
It's a really good point, and it's I think it's a point to consider this week as the NCAA basketball tournament, that multi-million dollar cash cow starts to generate the millions of dollars.
I just saw it this week. They generate $821 million of the $1.1 billion that the NCAA generates in revenue. And isn't, correct me if I'm wrong, isn't the NCAA a not-for-profit?
I think so.
I mean, that is the biggest, that's an even bigger joke.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. Who are we kidding there?
Yeah.
I mean, they're no better than FIFA.
Right.
And FIFA was one of the most corrupt non-for-profits in the world. NCAA isn't far behind.
Well, and look, I'm not anti-college sports, not at all. I enjoy the basketball tournament, but there is a fundamental disconnect between how it's presented and how it's considered and what really goes on. I mean, this is a multi-million dollar enterprise going on today, tomorrow, Sunday, for all of these schools, these big-time schools. And this is why some of us prefer professional sports, in particular professional football, because there's no pretense about it. It's all about the money. We know that, right? We know that that's what the bills are about.
You can make a very strong argument, if you're going to go against the college sports machine and the NCAA, that it is full and outright exploitation of athletic talent. They can argue that, you know, they get a college education in return, and that's what they're bartering with. But the money that is being made and generated nowadays is so exorbitant that it just doesn't wash. It just doesn't wash. And, you know, we're not too far removed from just a few years ago when those Northwestern football players tried to overthrow the system, and unfortunately it fizzled out and failed. And I think part of the reason it fails is because of the wide variance between the cream of the crop Division I athletes and the true student athletes at Division III who want to still compete and continue their athletic careers and are doing it without any benefits, you know, scholarship-wise, but still want to compete and get an education at the same time. I mean, I was in that boat. I was a Division III athlete, and, you know, I mean, could I have probably played low Division I? Yeah, but, you know, the politics involved and scholarship and who's getting a scholarship, who's not, partial scholarship, this, that, and the other. I didn't want to deal with all of that stuff. Division III was the way to go, and for me, it was some of the best. I mean, it's probably the best 4 years of my life doing that.
Yeah.
And so there's that half of it. And you say, well, see, and that's what the NCAA probably stands on. That's the soapbox they get on. See, we are about the student athlete and blah, blah, blah. And here is the reason why. But you've got to separate those two entities, I think. You know, those Power Five conferences have kind of come up with a separate.
I was just going to say, they have kind of almost broken away from the NCAA.
Yeah. Pretty much,
because they are such money-generating entities, the Big Five conferences,
and maybe those are, and maybe those are the athletes that you do pay.
Yeah, they don't need the NCAA rules or regulations. They don't need the NCAA to put together TV networks because they all do it themselves now. Anyway, we just thought we'd throw that out there today. Robert Klemko quoting an NFL executive, an unnamed NFL executive. I wish you put his name on this.
He wasn't even interviewing him for this. He just started spouting off.
Yeah. The whole thing stinks, he said.
They're crooks.
How in the world is this legal? They're
and
crooks.
That's why, you know, the plan that I have here for UB to go to the AAC, I'm just figuring nothing's changing. So let's try to get UB up on the front foot of this and help them business-wise so they can retain good coaches like the ones they have in Coach Jack and Coach Oates.
I really thought a year and a half ago, once the FBI got involved, that things might change. But it's not happening. You can see it. You know, with the basketball coaches. All right, football talk is going to dominate our show today, obviously. We're going to have, in just a couple of minutes, Adrian Waddle, new Bills offensive lineman, on the line with us. Greg Cosell joins us at 1 o'clock. We're going to spend a lot of time talking about the NFL owners' meetings coming up next week in Phoenix, Arizona, and the rules changes that might be discussed there. We have a Twitter poll for you here today, which deals with the Bills. A lot of talk this week on our show about the New York Jets. We talked with Rich Cimini of ESPN NFL Nation New York yesterday about the Jets, the moves they've made. They made some big moves in free agency in the first couple of weeks. So a simple Twitter poll question for you. Which team, the Bills or the Jets, is more ready to compete for a wild card spot. Now, draft still to come, we know that. Schedule hasn't been released yet, obviously we know that. But which team, the Bills or the Jets, is more ready to compete for a wild card spot? Some may say, why wild card? Well, the Patriots are still there.
I think we have to be realistic.
Yes. We don't concede them anything. But if you're going to make the playoffs, you would start with a wild card spot, right?
Yeah, and I think it's fair. I don't think anybody's saying that, you know, the Patriots are an absolute lock.
No.
But if you ask the average national media member to pick the most likely division champions across the league, New England's going to be one of the first two names to come out of their mouth.
Yeah.
And that's due in part to past history, but it's also due in part to the fact that they've been able to sustain it as long as they have, and the two most key components to that formula are still playing and coaching in New England. So we're just trying to be real about it.
So which team, Bills or Jets, is more ready to compete for a wild card spot? Twitter poll is up and running with about 400 votes in so far. 88% of you say the Bills are more ready to compete for a wild card spot.
I'd like to know why.
Yeah, and 12% say the Jets. Give us a call. Let us know why. Send us in a tweet at @OneBillsLive, and we may read it on the tweet sheet. Tell us why you believe that that the Bills are more ready to compete, or the Jets. 803-0550, the number to call with your comments and responses to this, or from outside Buffalo, 1-888-550-2550. Which team is more ready to compete for a wild card spot? Chris and I ready to go, and from now until 3 o'clock, come on back. Adrian Waddle scheduled to join us when we return. One Bills Live, presented by Collider Health from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back to One Bills Live. I'm John Murphy. Chris Brown is in. Bills Insider from BuffaloBills.com, replacing Steve Tasker today. Steve should be back on Monday. Welcome to the show. Hey, which team is more ready to compete for a wild card spot from the AFC East, the Jets or the Bills? We left the Dolphins out. We left the Patriots out for obvious reasons. You may have other thoughts on that. Give us a call, 803-0550, toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. Call from Los Angeles. Patrick in Los Angeles.
What?
We got listeners. All right. Hi, Patrick. Welcome
to the
show.
Getting an early start out there.
How's it going, guys?
Great. Good. Thank you.
I just wanted to chat about the college situation. I feel like that there's a way that they should be moving the gate receipts and the merchandise, at least partial percentages, maybe into some kind of trust or, you know, some kind of way, because the compensation isn't equal to the output. They're selling tickets, T-shirts, merchandise, and the athletes aren't being compensated.
I'd be up for that.
I like the idea of a trust. What do you think of that, Murph?
That's interesting too. But why do you just do gate receipts and merchandise, Patrick?
Well, that's the biggest thing. It's like I work in the music industry, and you know the two biggest ways that people actually make revenue are, you know, off of their likeness, the merchandise, and you know, the appearances being, you know, tickets. And these, if you look at the four of the five largest stadiums in the entire world are college football stadiums. You know, it's like LSU, Alabama, Penn State.
I think Tennessee's
and
up there.
And the other one. But it's a tickets and T-shirts game. And these kids, their likeness is being used. It's not the coaches that are selling the tickets, and it's not the legacies. It's the excitement that the players generate. It's the ecstasy on the field.
Most of the
money,
though,
money,
TV is where most of the money comes from. Yeah. I just don't know why you would leave that out, Patrick.
Excuse me, I forget. Yeah, it's definitely their likeness, though, that's selling the media rights.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? That goes to the likeness. But anyways, I'll leave you with that. But I feel like that there's positive, proactive ways to not steal from the athletes. There's plenty of ways to split the revenue. And that I think that it doesn't need to be an equal, like more like a communist kind of funding. But it's like, hey, the places that sell more tickets and sell more T-shirts, those athletes should get a tiny bit more. We figure, like, there should be, you know, several meetings. It could take a while, but this is something that can be done.
And I agree.
Do it on a sliding scale, maybe.
Forward.
Yeah, well, the colleges, the conferences that sell more tickets and get more TV revenue, they get more money. So you could
share.
You could kind of parcel that out to players. I think you're right.
There's ways to figure this out. We're smart enough. Anyways, I think the Bills are going to end up making the playoffs. I think the AFC East is going to be strong, but really love what Bean has done this offseason. Go Bills.
Thanks, Patrick. All the way from Los Angeles. Patrick on the line with us. We're going to switch gears a little bit here. We got a guest on the line. He just signed with the Buffalo Bills last Saturday. Offensive lineman in his sixth year in the NFL. Happy to have LaAdrian Waddle on the line with us. LaAdrian, John Murphy, and Chris Brown back here at One Bills Drive. Where are you calling us from, LaAdrian? Where do you spend your offseason these days?
Right now, I'm in Michigan right now. I'm spending time with some family right now. So we're up here with family hanging out.
You've been in New England for a couple of years, and I understand from Twitter you actually spent some time in this area, what, in Niagara Falls after the Super Bowl victory by the Patriots this year?
Yeah, we decided, you know, on the way over to Michigan, we stopped in Niagara, see Niagara, haven't seen that before. And, you know, we spent some time in, around the city, and then we headed over to Toronto and then heading over to Michigan.
What'd you think of Niagara Falls?
Niagara Falls was cool. You know, it was definitely we went in February, so obviously it was really cold. And,
yeah.
You know, but I think you know, seeing the falls, you know, with all the winter wonderland kind of look, you know, that was kind of cool.
It is cool. I'll tell you a little story. I went the week after the Bills season ended, early January. My wife and I spent a night. We live, you know, 15 minutes from here. We spent the night in Niagara Falls in the middle of the winter. It was January. It was cold, but it's spectacular. I mean, I think we do take it for granted here. You probably did not take it for granted when you saw it. You'd never seen it before, right?
Right. I've never seen, you know, anything kind of like that. You know, I like to kind of, you know, travel and see different things. And, you know, being from a little town in Texas, you know, I haven't seen a whole lot.
And from what we can see on Twitter, your wife was pretty pumped about it, too. I mean, Shelby is kind of active on Twitter. I think she's pretty happy about coming to Buffalo, too. I mean, she might be more excited than you are based on some of her reaction there. Can you just shed some light on the misses and why? What's got her so pumped?
You know, just a little change of scenery, you know, a new opportunity. You know, she realizes how big this opportunity is for me, for us, you know, and for our families. And, you know, we're excited about it, you know. We're excited about the change, and we're excited about what lies ahead.
Adrian Waddle, Bills offensive lineman, is our guest on the line with us right now. You mentioned small town in Texas. Is that Columbus, Texas, your hometown, Adrian?
Yes, sir, Columbus, Texas.
What's that like there, and where? What part of Texas is that?
Columbus is a little town about an hour west of Houston. If you know anything about the road systems down there, if you take I-10 west,
yep.
I-10, you go through Columbus about halfway before you get to San Antonio.
Okay, I got you.
But you'll pass through there in the blink of an eye now. It's only about probably 4,000 people now.
Okay. And Texas,
it's definitely, you know, off the radar.
Texas Tech was your choice of a college. How did you wind up there?
You know, honestly, coming out, I didn't have a lot of offers. For me, it really came down to, you know, staying close to home and going to U of H, or kind of, you know, getting away from home and, you know, playing in a Big 12 school at Texas Tech, and that's the decision I made, and I thought that was best for me.
They're looking pretty good in the tournament. I mean, a lot of people are high on them. I don't know if you've got your ear to the ground on what the basketball team's doing, but, I mean, they had a darn good season. Are you keeping an eye on that or no?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I paid a lot of attention last year. You know, last season they played some tournament games that were actually in Dallas, so I got to go to that. That was pretty cool.
Oh, nice.
And, yeah, and, you know, them boys really turned the program around. You know, that's credit to the coach and credit to those guys for working their tails off. And, you know, they've been really impressive to watch, you know. It's been a great run they've been on.
Later, in your NFL career started with the Lions as an undrafted rookie back in 2013. Tell me about that process and what that was like, your couple-of-year stint with the Detroit Lions.
Well, you know, obviously the whole undrafted thing, that was disappointing. You know, I felt like I should have been taken, you know, somewhere. Not exactly where, but, you know, I felt like someone should have pulled the trigger and,
yeah,
you know, took a chance on me. You know, I made it this long in the NFL. You know, a lot of guys still aren't around from 13. So, you know, I think that kind of speaks for itself. And then, you know, just being with Detroit, you know, I saw it as a good fit. I had met the previous O-line coach before. You know, I felt good about the situation, and I just came in and busted my tail. And about halfway through the season, I ended up starting. And, you know, they just kind of kept me in there. You know, I was playing so good, and they kind of rolled with the hot hand.
How difficult was it to kind of go from getting an opportunity like that so early in your career and, you know, performing to then, you know, going to New England and, you know, you're kind of in, you're out, you're in, you're out. What was that like, you know, from a preparation standpoint alone?
I don't think the preparation changed too much. You know, it was, you know, obviously, you know, being kind of the swing tackle in New England, you know, you never know when you were going to go in. You didn't know which side you were going to be on. So you kind of had to prepare a little more, I'd say. But, you know, it was a humbling experience, man. It kind of, you know, brought me back down to earth, you know, kind of made me refocus and, you know, look at how I approach the game and, you know, what I do as far as, you know, taking care of my body and getting ready to go from a mental standpoint and just, you know, really getting back to good fundamentals and, you know, having, you know, mental and physical toughness.
You really didn't have much downtime in between your stint with the Lions and then being claimed by the Patriots. You were claimed the day after you got cut by Detroit, right, back in December a couple years ago?
Yeah. The next day I was over in New England, and then actually 2 weeks later I ended up starting, or not starting, but I ended up having to play in the game.
Hey, in your time in Detroit, Bobby Johnson was the assistant offensive line coach for the Lions, now the head offensive line coach here. How much of a factor was he in getting you here to Buffalo, playing for him, having familiarity with him? What did that mean as far as your decision to play here with the Bills?
I think it, you know, it factored in a little bit. You know, me and Bobby have a great relationship, and, you know, I have a great relationship with Hef, too, the assistant line coach, and, you know, Daboll's over here, too. He's the OC. I've worked with him over in New England. So, you know, I have a good relationship with those guys. And, you know, it's always nice to, you know, have some kind of familiarity, you know, in the, with a little change of scenery.
Yeah.
So that definitely played into it. You know, me and those guys are real cool, and I look forward to working with them.
I want to ask you about one of your Patriots coaches, a guy that is notable, Dante Scarnecchia, who is assistant head coach and the offensive line coach. I think he took a leave of absence or something for a year or two. But what makes him different? What makes him one of the better offensive line coaches we hear about in the NFL?
I think he does a great job of, you know, day in and day out, getting the most out of everybody. You know, he's not a big rah-rah guy, but, you know, he's honest with you. He's up front with you, and you know, when you come to him with problems, he'll always give you a solution. And, you know, he really harps on the fundamentals. And, you know, he helps to bring out the, you know, best football player in you. You know, he's definitely helped me, you know, improve over these last, you know, 4 years I've been there. And, you know, it's been a blessing to work with a guy like that.
I know that coaching staff values having, you know, players with a high football IQ. And the story that I read about you from back in high school when you were helping run the huddle with the young high school quarterback that was playing with you guys is kind of fascinating because you don't hear that very often. How unique was that for you when, you know, your coach approached you and said, hey, you want to take calls in from the sideline? And, I mean, you weren't just running the huddle. You're running the line. You're helping the quarterback with the call. I mean, can you just kind of map all that out and how it struck you when it was first presented to you as an opportunity?
You know, kind of how we did things in high school, we kind of signaled in the formations and then, you know, somebody would run the play in. And, you know, we had a younger quarterback who was kind of, you know, he was a young guy and, you know, kind of wanted to take some of that pressure off of him. You know, I kind of always yelled out the formations and kind of just, you know, kind of try to keep the huddle in line and kind of trying to keep guys locked in. You know, I didn't think it was a big deal at the time, but, you know, apparently I guess it was. And, you know, I was just trying to play football and help my teammates out. That's all I thought it was,
yeah,
honestly.
But developing that kind of all-encompassing mindset, I have to imagine that kind of puts you on a fast track in terms of, you know, getting deeper into the X's and O's as you advanced in your football career, whether it was college or even now, right?
Right, yeah, I just, you know, I like to be involved, you know, I like to see the big picture, you know, I like to pay attention to, you know, what routes guys are running, you know, what the backs are thinking.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just think, you know, being a player on a team where, you know, all 11 guys got to work together to get stuff done, I think that's important, you know. You know, obviously I have my job and I have to do what I have to do, but, you know, just being aware of what guys have to do and, you know, what their responsibilities are, I think it, you know, it does nothing but benefit everyone.
Well, Adrian, Super Bowl experience with New England, did that make it difficult to leave? And what did you take from being in those Super Bowls with the Patriots?
I mean, the Super Bowls, that's, you know, the pinnacle of the sport, man. That's why you play, man. You play to, you know, get a chance to play in that game. And, you know, when you get there, you hope you do enough to win. You know, we won two, we lost one. It was a blessing to be there for all three, and, you know, it was definitely, you know, I definitely think, you know, coming to the Bills, you know, part of easing that kind of decision for me was, you know, seeing how the Bills have been progressing, seeing the things they've been doing, you know, being in New England, we play them all the time, so we kind of understand how they work, and, you know, I always appreciated how those guys over there worked, and, you know, how hard they played, and you know, that's something I kind of take pride in, so I figured it was a great fit.
You also mentioned, you know, you mentioned already some of the familiarity you have here with the coaches that you've worked with in the past. Sliding, you know, to the other team in the division, I mean, you have a familiarity with a lot of these teams that you're going to be facing twice a year. How much does that help with the transition, knowing the players you'll be lining up with are all new?
Well, you know, each year, you know, every team changes. You know, guys come in, guys come out, and, you know, that's just how it rolls. You know, there's roster turnover. But, you know, like you said, to some extent, there is that familiarity with the other teams and, you know, definitely familiarity with how things work in New England and those guys. But, you know, that could do nothing but benefit us. You know, I'll do my best to try to help everybody be ready to roll and try to give my perspective on what I see from, you know, each guy or each team, and, you know, just try to help the team out as much as I can.
Ladrian, you're one of five new offensive linemen, veteran NFL players signed by this Bills roster over the last couple of weeks. What do you think they have in mind for you? What did they tell you about your possible role here with the Buffalo Bills?
You know, that's something that's not defined until, you know, we really can put the pads on and training camp and, you know, play football. You know, all spring it's more team bonding and, you know, getting physically right and, you know, kind of just getting used to the system and, you know, how things work over here. But, you know, come fall camp, you know, that's when things will be decided and, you know, that'll be all predicated on how well I perform and how things work out. You know, I don't think anything's set in stone. I don't think anybody's, you know, a set starter. And, you know, I'm going to just come out and, you know, do my thing and, you know, we'll see where we end up.
Knowing the success that you've enjoyed, you know, in your career, you know, with a couple of rings on your finger, you have to know that those questions are going to be coming in the locker room. Hey, what does it take to get there? What do we have to do to kind of get over the hump and be a team like that? What's probably some of the first things that are going to come out of your mouth when some of those questions might be posed to you by your new teammates?
I think one that really stood out to me is just being, you know, not only physically but mentally tough. You know, the flow of a football game, you know, there's these big dramatic swings and there's, you know, there's a lot going on with, you know, each play and each drive and just being able to, you know, come off to the sideline and gather your thoughts and, you know, talk stuff over with your coaches and then go back out there and, you know, perform at a higher or even higher level is just, you know, that's what it's all about. Being able to perform in those critical situations and being able to, you know, find a way when you need it the most.
Well, Adrian, you've already spent some of your off-season vacation time here in Western New York. You're probably looking forward to coming back in a couple of weeks here, huh?
Oh, yeah. I'm excited to get to work. I'm actually going to be in town Monday to, you know, look at some places and, you know, start trying to figure that situation out.
Okay, good luck with that. I hope we get to meet you then. Thanks for coming on the show with us here today. We appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Ladrian Waddle, offensive lineman, 6'6", 315-pounder in his sixth year, a couple of years with Detroit, and the last 4 years with the New England Patriots. Ladrian Waddle on the line with us. Sounds like a good guy. Sounds like a smart guy.
All I'm going to tell you is this, just selfishly, as a reporter that covers this team,
yeah.
You know, we lost Eric Wood in the locker room, and from an interview and a quote perspective, that was a loss. You know,
yeah,
and I didn't get to talk to Mitch Morse on the phone like you guys did earlier this week. But after talking to Ty Insecki here in studio and then Ladrian Waddle on the phone here, I am a very happy man right now.
Yeah,
because I have people that I feel pretty comfortable with going to and getting answers, you know, with what's going on the field. These guys are going to be able to articulate that pretty well just on first blush here.
Yep,
and that means. That means easier writing for me and better stories for everybody else out there. So good on Brandon Bean, not only from a talent standpoint, yeah, but from a quotable standpoint. This is a major plus. I am very happy.
Sure, that was a big
I was right under. It was right under the money. Like this is what we're going to be the contract offer, and yeah, is he a good quote? Check the box.
Yeah.
Good.
That box.
This is good stuff, Murph. This is good news on a Friday.
I'm not going to argue with you. Ladrian Waddle on the line with us. Chris and I coming back with more One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. John Murphy and Chris Brown in for Steve Tasker today. Steve's coming back Monday. Had a good conversation with Ladrian Waddle. We got Greg Cosell coming up at 1 o'clock. 2 o'clock, we're going to talk about some of the NFL officiating proposals that are out there. They'll be discussed and voted on at the owners' meetings, we believe, next week. Hey, before Chris was here this week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Joe B., Joe Biscotti, a sports director at Channel 7 WKBW-TV in Buffalo, was here. We went through the draft. That's his wheelhouse. Joe had his first mock draft that came out on WKBWTV.com the other day. Worth mentioning. He's got Kyler Murray going number one overall to Arizona. He's got Quinnen Williams, defensive tackle, Alabama, number two to San Francisco. The Jets get Nick Bosa, edge rusher. The Raiders get Josh Allen, edge rusher from Kentucky. Down the line they go. You get to, I should mention seven because Chris will kill me if I don't. DK Metcalf, the wide receiver from Ole Miss, goes to Jacksonville. Montez Sweat goes right before the Bills, number eight, to the Lions. And then Joe B. has Ed Oliver, defensive tackle from Houston, going to the Buffalo Bills at number nine. And just to quote Joe from his post, this pair is gaining steam and for good reason. Brendan Bean views pass rushers, both from the edge and the interior, to be premium positions. The Bills do not have currently a player at this position of starting caliber. I think we talked about this yesterday. I agree with that, right? With Jordan Phillips is the right now the nominal three technique on the defensive line. Ed
He's
Oliver
insurance.
Would jump right in. Yeah.
And, you know, the Lions are going to make this a very interesting situation because they're looking for edge rush help. And I wouldn't – while I would be really happy with Ed Oliver as the pick for Bills at nine – if there is edge rushing talent that slips to them, that you know sits higher on the board, obviously they're going to take the edge rushing talent over Oliver inside. But this is the kind of talent that's missing right now from the defensive line, even from a starting perspective right now. You can line up Shaq Lawson, Jerry Hughes, and Trent Murphy and be okay at defensive end this year. I don't think you can say the same thing about your three technique defensive tackle right now. You need one there.
Yeah. What do you think, as you said, if edge rush talent slips, so, for instance, Montez Sweat, if he's there at number 10.
I think it makes it a harder discussion.
I still think they might go with Ed Oliver.
I think so, too, but the discussion isn't as easy, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I think, let's just say hypothetically that not only Kyler Murray, but somehow Haskins finds his way, you know, into that top 10 discussion and goes in front of the Bills pick at nine. Well, now somebody's getting pushed down. And so if there is an edge rush talent there that the Bills really, really like, you wonder what direction they go, especially if it's a prospect that's ranked a little bit higher on their board than Oliver. I mean, they always talk about best player available. You know, that would be tough.
You don't expect Bosa to be there.
And good Joe, problem to have. But
yeah, Joe's got Josh Allen, the defensive end from Kentucky, going number four. I don't think Josh Allen will slip down to nine territory.
No, I don't think he does. I kind of had him pegged to the Jets all along because they need an edge rusher like crazy. Now, he did have an edge rusher going to them, right? Bosa, I think he had?
Yes, Bosa, third overall.
I don't know if he's getting to three. I mean,
Quinnen Williams is pretty good, Chris.
He's really good. The Niners have drafted a lot of DTs, though, the last few years. They got the kid from Oregon. And there's a couple others in there. I mean, I don't have them off the top of my head. I just know they've gone. Yeah, DeForest Buckner, wasn't that the kid from Oregon they drafted? And he was a top five pick. And he's young. I mean, he's like 25, 24. Again, I mean, if they think he's the best player on the board, they're going to take him. But they need edge rush help. And I could see Bosa going too. Because the Niners need – I mean, Niners, Jets, Raiders all need edge rush help. It's going to be an interesting jockeying for position there. And then the Lions, who also need edge rush help, are just going to have to take the best of what's left, which wouldn't be a terrible thing. But I think those are your top four teams that are really hard up for some edge rushing talent.
As far as quarterbacks, Joe's mock draft, he has 10. Denver going with quarterback Drew Locke of Missouri, not the Ohio State quarterback Haskins. I find that interesting. I don't know that Drew Locke merits a top 10 pick. Joe thinks
throws a nice ball. I'll say that. I mean, it looks really good coming out of his hand. He's pretty good mechanically. And we know that John Elway is not going to draft anybody under 6'3" or 6'4" because did you see that conversation he had?
No,
he had a conversation with an NFL reporter and they asked him about Kyler Murray. And he said, well, I worry about quarterbacks that are shorter, knowing they have to operate under center sometimes. And in his own team's offense last year, and I know there's a turnover at coaching, but they were in the shotgun more than 60% of the time. But you look at his drafting history. I mean, he drafted Paxton Lynch, 6'7". He drafted Brock Osweiler, 6'6". I mean, he doesn't draft shorties. So you better – and Haskins isn't short. I'm not saying that. But he goes to the tall end of the scale and stays there.
Right.
I mean, he is locked in on measurables for that.
Hey, that's Joe Biscaglia's mock draft. You can catch it at WKBW.com. We thank Joe for sharing that with us. He talked about it with us on the show the other day. And thanks, Joe, for coming on the other day. We come back. Greg Cosell, NFL – I always forget the name of his show. NFL matchup on ESPN. He's executive producer and analyst. Greg Cosell will be on the line with us when we return next hour. Come on back. One Bills Live, presented by Kalata Health from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.